John here, everyone, for the worst comic podcast ever. On February 20th, I was able to meet one of my favorite all-time actresses, Emmy Award winner Lindsay Wagner, at Empower Comic Con. If you're a man of my age, then like me, you probably had a crush on the Bionic Woman, and perhaps still do. It was thrilling for me to share some time with this intelligent, thoughtful, and incredibly talented person, and to see the adoration in the eyes of her fans. It did not take long to witness her sense of humor, and to sense the integrity with which she lives her life. Thank you to Lindsay, to her assistant Regina, and all of the folks at Empower Comic Con for making this possible and for allowing the worst comic podcast ever to moderate her panel. Enjoy. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Holloway, and I'm one of the hosts of a podcast that we are legally required to call the worst comic podcast ever. On behalf of Empower Comic Con, I'm thrilled to welcome our featured guest here. Whether as an actress, an advocate, a humanitarian, or author, Lindsay Wagner is dedicated in her professional and personal life to a commitment to exploring and to advancing human potential. Lindsay is most well known, of course, for her portrayal of Jamie Summers, aka the Bionic Woman. The role spun out of her appearance on the $6 Million Man opposite Lee Majors, and it netted her the adoration of millions of fans, including myself, as well as an Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series. She was the primary guest star on the pilot episode of The Rockford Files, had three different roles on Marcus Welby, MD, and has had been in far too many movies and television shows for us to list here, although I will say that I did very much enjoy her recent portrayal of Dr. Vanessa Calder on both Warehouse 13 and Alphas. Outside of acting, Lindsay has co-authored two books, a vegetarian cookbook, as well as a book on acupressure. She has co-founded a nonprofit organization that offers families and individuals guidance and assistance to help end cycles of family violence. She also has been offering experiential Quiet the Mind and Open the Heart retreats and workshops. So without further ado, let's please give Lindsay Wagner a warm and power welcome.
So I need to ask a question.
Yes.
If this is the worst podcast ever,
right,
does that mean all your guests become the worst guests ever?
Well, we try to drag them down, if we can, a little bit. So if you get fewer calls after this, you'll know
okay.
It was because, oh, she was on that podcast. They're the worst ever. So, you know, when we looked for a name for a podcast, a lot were taken, and no one had claimed this one. It was weird. That
wonder
it was
still- why.
Yeah, I know.
So that definitely gets your attention.
I did not major in marketing, so...
Hence, you're on the worst
right,
podcast ever.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't pay either, so there's that. So I did want to ask you a couple questions. One, I was reading a little bit about you, and is it true that one of the things that helped get you into acting was that you had actually were a babysitter for James Best, is that right? So you may not know the name James Best, but you know his face. Not only was he on, I mean, a zillion different TV shows, but the role for which he's probably best known was Roscoe Coltrane on The Dukes of Hazzard. But he was in so
the
many
sheriff,
other shows before that.
Remember.
What's that?
The sheriff.
Yes, Roscoe P. Coltrane. So is it true that you babysat for his kids? Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I did. I was 12, as a matter of fact. And, you know, the funny thing about him being known for that's what he became famous for. He's a wonderful actor and a wonderful dramatic actor. And he's done several things on television, but also on features. There was a wonderful war film, and I can't remember the name of it, but World War II film. But anyway, so when that came up, and all of a sudden he was... really a kind of a household thing. It was like, really? For that? You know? As fun as it was. You know?
Well, and it's ironic because that show came out after Bionic Woman.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I mean, if you watch any of those old shows, because I love to go back and watch Bonanza and Gunsmoke and all those older shows, you watch any of that stuff and you see him all over the place. And he's done so many other things. But that's the one that made him a household face, I
exactly.
think.
Exactly,
yeah.
As an actor.
Yeah.
He was a professional acting coach who worked with working actors. It just so happened that the way my life was, and he just kind of felt like, because I was babysitting all the time when I wasn't going to school and whatnot, and kind of knew my family, and so he said, you need to get an outlet of some kind. So he told all these working actors that he was coaching. Because back then, I'm old enough to where there was still the studio system left. A little bit of the studio system was left. And the they still sent out talent scouts to come to these places where coaches would work with professional actors, and people would get cast out of these showcases that they would put on. And so Roger Davis, well, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember some of these people, Keddie Lester, what was his name, the big guy with the dark hair? Forgot his name. Sorry. What the heck was his name? He was in a Western. I almost said it. Well, anyway. But people like Clint Eastwood studied with James. And I can't remember all the other people, the big names that you would know.
Right.
He coached quite a few people. But I didn't know. I just thought it was an acting class because he invited me to come in, and you know. So I went in, and of course, in retrospect, I know that he kind of said, "Look, I'm bringing a kid into the class." Everybody just kind of and wanted to give me an outlet, a place to kind of, because he, of course, being a sensitive guy, and he kind of noticed that I was kind of funny, shy in one way, kind of locked up, didn't share myself, my pain with anybody. Like, the more I would hurt, the funnier I would get. So I was outgoing, but as kind of camouflage. Didn't know the value of sharing your true heart with somebody at that time. And so he kind of, being an actor, of course, I was busted. But he never said anything. He just kind of invited me in and gave me a place to give me an outlet for my emotional self. And he gave me the first thing he gave me was a role by Tennessee Williams, This Property is Condemned. You familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's about a little girl who's literally hiding from social services. She's on her own, and her sister is gone, and her parents are gone, and ultimately she just so she was about 12, 14 years old, my age. And kind of trying to hide her emotions, and then she kind of opens up and breaks down. And so that was the first really and we had our first showcase, and the funny thing was that I was the only one that got an offer from a studio out of the showcase, and they all went.
Yeah, great, thanks for bringing the kid, James.
Right. I actually ultimately didn't take it, but that was my beginning. So I really jumped into the deep end first without even realizing what was happening.
And it's interesting you say that, because I think for some people, performance kinds of, it's a way to access emotions that you maybe don't necessarily want, or you don't feel free to share as you, as Lindsay Wagner, but maybe as a role you do. And I think for other people, maybe it becomes kind of a wall, you know, just to hold maybe some of that stuff in. But that's interesting that for you, you found that outlet. You know, one of the things I talked about, we hosted Gigi Edgley's panel earlier, and she kind of talked about being a kid who maybe didn't always feel like she kind of fit in exactly. Was that something for you too that you felt, or was
yeah?
I mean, maybe that's everybody to some degree.
Well, I think I'm sure that age, of course, right?
I'm still working.
Yeah, right.
Through a little, but yeah.
I've given up.
Oh, okay, well.
And see, there's a much more peaceful way
right.
to not fit in. But.
And then I had also read that you had done some modeling work but didn't like it. Is that true?
Yes. I was one of Nina Blanchard's first models when she started her agency. She and Eileen Ford were had the two top modeling agencies on the West Coast, and I did it for several years, but the older I got, the more, it was interesting, the acting, because I started that actually the same year. It was a very profound year in my life, being 12 years old. We met Nina Blanchard, and she like pegged me, talked to my mom, said I want to hire her, and so I did. She taught me how to do makeup and hair and work with the camera and the whole thing. It was quite an education at that age, and at the same time that thing happened with James. And so this year was kind of carved the path, I think, for my life. But as I went on and as I was studying, acting I think had a lot to do with it. Plus I was growing up and becoming more introspective and thoughtful about myself and about life in the world, and it was a big, huge, cultural changing time. It was the 60s, and you know, everything was changing, and outlooks, people were allowed to question your own thoughts and you explore them. And so I just found it more and more restricting to as an expression. I mean, certainly it was a great way to make money, but it wasn't after a while, because it was also the time when everything started to be being sold by sex appeal. And so here I was very tall, I looked older, much older than I was, and it's like, you know, you go in and you're 13, 14, 15 years old, and the photographer's going, okay, come on, honey, look sexy, come on, give me that look, give me this, like, what look, you know?
So I have not yet learned that look, yeah.
I mean, I kind of know it, sort of, but I'm not giving it to you. So, yeah, it was very uncomfortable. And then, of course, I got up into the older teenage years, and I was about 18 when I finally quit. It was just like, come on, really? I mean, again, every single time, every single thing we're selling, every single thing, it was just pissing me off. And, of course, it became somewhat of a feminist, you know. So it was like I was on my way there. And actually, I was called myself a humanist, not even a feminist, because to me it was like we all had the opportunity to change during that cultural revolution, men right. and women as well. So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your role as Jamie Summers. So, Jamie was not supposed to actually survive the $6 million man. Is that right?
True.
Yeah. And, oh, I was also going to ask you, have you ever actually been skydiving?
Nope. So, not after I did that scene.
Right. Well, it's funny because there's a couple times later where I think you're even watching somebody skydive and you're like, I don't want, like, the characters, I'm a little sensitive about skydiving. I don't really want to watch that.
You know, the funny thing was that I wanted to do it. I did have an interest in it. I never had done it. And then once I had my children, my first son, I never wanted to do it after that. I completely lost it. It was all of a sudden the value of my life got a lot more important to me.
It's funny because I actually met you at Planet Comic Con a couple years ago, and it was right before I actually went skydiving. A couple of my students, so I'm a high school teacher, and a couple of my students, I teach physics, and we talk about free fall and everything. And they said, "Oh, we're going to go skydiving. You should come with us." And so, not too long before I met you, not too long before I did that, and I was like, "Okay." I met the Bionic Woman. It's I don't know if that's a good omen or a bad omen to go skydiving.
She survived.
Right, I did. I can lift a car with this arm now. It's ironic, but that's... So, was it just that the character hit and was so popular that they decided to go ahead and have her own show, or was it just the time for that kind of show?
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the above. There was nothing like that. There was, first of all, for the generation, your generation, a lot of you's generation, my generation, we had Superman.
Right.
And we had Wonder Woman, but television really came in when I was born, believe it or not. And so that medium, that constant ability to have a relationship with a fictional character other than a comic book, and or a superhero kind of thing, something to hold on to as an aspiration for oneself. It was a new phenomenon in television, and I mean in our culture, and it was through the television. So the $6 million man was kind of the first of that. And so they created, so it was kind of like the quintessential father figure, if you will, that image. And then the female version of that, the quintessential mother figure, if you will, was born. And they killed her right in front of all the kids' eyes, you know, but it traumatized kids all over the country. Letters just flooded in to the network. Are you crazy? What are you? I mean, and even letters from a couple of children's hospitals.
Wow.
One in Boston, one in New York.
Wow.
Saying, hey, you know, you just traumatized 75% of the hospital. Do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's the power of we have power that we don't realize and just, you know, use it. I mean, people used it, and it brought about a change. So they had to bring her back to life. It was intended to just be a ratings booster. Back then, it was a formula. If you want to do a little ratings boosting on a particular show, which is why not too many shows had a husband and wife or two lovers as stars, because it was kind of a focal point. Of course, it was always very male dominated up to that point, and so you want to be able to sprinkle it in with a little love affair here and there because you boost the rate. Oh, he's going to go for the girl, kind of thing, and then. So that's kind of what it was, right. And they then wanted to get rid of her, and it was a very typical formula, but it did not work. So we brought her back, and she came to life in the way that she did. But in order to keep her off the series, having to be on the series because they were going to be married, she had to have amnesia. So she couldn't remember him, so they couldn't continue the relationship.
Right.
And also for the kids to know that she was okay, the school teacher bit, well, now that she can't play tennis anymore because she's bionic, that's not fair, right? So they put the aspect of her going to teach school with the kids so the kids would know she was with them.
Right.
And so it was a beautiful, a really nice way of addressing their boo-boo, and the kids felt good about that. So I was like, well, at least she's okay. Well, yeah. Then all the letters came in saying, we love it. Where'd she go? We want more. And so literally the board of directors of ABC said, we have to have that series.
And I want to say that Bionic Woman premiered very similar to the time that Wonder Woman with Linda Carter, they were similar.
It was after.
It was a little bit after, but they were pretty close.
Yeah, well, once they realized that it was working to have a woman in the lead, it was like, okay, what else can we do? Boom, boom, boom,
Yeah.
It was my show, and then Linda's, and then Charlie's, and then, the rest is history.
So I always thought that was kind of interesting, some of the aspects of what they did in that. She was a professional tennis player. She's an international professional tennis player. And then she comes back. They've kind of made a new identity for her as a teacher. I also, as a teacher, I really want to be able to do the phone book trick.
Oh, I'll bet you do.
I would so love to do that phone book trick, like when a lot of the kids are talking and you just rip a phone book in half. Yeah. She was so gentle with it, though. She's like, I want to support you and everything. And I'd be like, oh, take that. But that's just... I'm not a good person, but that's fine. But I thought, they did that, but it seemed like she would go out on these missions and everything, and no one would recognize that, hey, she looks a lot like that tennis player, that famous tennis player.
I guess she wasn't so famous.
Right. Well, right. She went on the Miss United States.
I never thought about
that. It was the Miss
United
States.
Nobody's ever said that.
She's in the Miss United States pageant. She's on the Miss United States pageant as Jamie Summers. They actually introduced her with the same name she had before, and nobody's like, I mean.
Okay, so I'm going to have to tell Ken Johnson this. He was a producer, right?
I'm like, if Yvonne Goolagong shows up in the Miss United States pageant, I'm going to remember her. I mean, I just think that people would remember
That's
that. Yeah. I thought that was a funny aspect. Well, I was a card carrying member of the Steve Austin fan club. I mean, I literally had the Steve Austin, and my brother, we got action figures for Christmas. He got the Steve Austin. I got the Oscar Goldman action figure. Action's probably a strong word for the Oscar Goldman. Do you know what the Oscar Goldman, what the accessory was with the Oscar Goldman?
It was a shield to get tan under your chin.
The Richard Anderson special.
That's what I'm telling you. That was it. He was sorry. It's kind of an inside joke, but yeah. It's funny because he Richard play, it was a real serious tennis player, and he played, tournaments all over the world, but he just had to always have a real big tan, and so we'd be on the set, and where's Richard? Oh, I don't know. Find the sun, and you'll find him. And he'd be sitting there. Ooh, he'd be sitting there with this, metal, not metal, but what do you call that?
Reflector. Some reflective surface.
Like a reflective surface, yeah. He was sitting there with that thing, and he's like, it's great, because he wanted to have even tan all down his neck. And so it became a big joke on the set.
That's fantastic. Well, Oscar, does anybody know what Oscar Goldman came with? It was an exploding briefcase. And if you open the briefcase the wrong way and you open it up, all the files and everything inside will all be blown up. That was about as exciting as it got, because you couldn't even do no. there was a lot of running. Like, you would run almost every episode because you had to show off. Did you? Was that just exhausting? I mean, would you, yes, run a ton?
I always used to say that God gave me that show as punishment because I would never exercise. I used to say, you know, I drive to the mailbox. And so all of a sudden, here's me, of all people, having to do this running show. So, yeah, it was. So it was actually good for me.
Yeah, and even longer because it was in slow motion. So that was...
a lot of isometrics. Right.
When you would run, would you in your head go, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na? I didn't know if that was just a thing, no?
No, okay. No. See, all you right. got to hear all that stuff.
Right, yeah.
There was none of that going on with me. Yeah. I recently bought a house last March, and I didn't even think about it. It's an old barn house. It's a barn with a big patio, and the upstairs has dormers. Remember what Jamie's place looked like?
Mm-hmm.
And with the dormers and everything, didn't even... enter my mind.
Right.
Two different friends come up and they went, you bought Jamie Summers' house. I said, I did. I was like, how could I not remember that? And I realized because all the time I spent was inside that place and it was on the stage. And everybody else watched the zoom into Jamie's house every
right.
day, so everybody knew what the outside looked like. I mean, I was there maybe twice at the place that they used for the outside. So I didn't even remember what it looked like from the outside until she said it, and I went, oh my gosh, I did.
Yeah, that's funny, because for you, the inside didn't have an outside context
right.
to really go with it.
No.
For them, it was like, we saw that zoom in 80 times.
That's
like,
right.
you just watched, they used that same stock footage a million right. times. How many times do you think during the course of that show did you do this?
Oh.
How many times? Because she had super hearing, like she had bionic hearing, but she... it wouldn't work unless she moved her hair out of the way.
Now listen, you know how many times I argued with the producer about that? Are you kidding me? I have to expose my ear?
Right.
Because I can't hear through my hair, but I can hear through that wall.
Right.
This doesn't make any sense.
We have to remind the audience.
We have to sell it. You know, well, yeah. So it gets even funnier because at one point I started refusing to do it. I went, no, I'm not doing it anymore. People know what the concept is. They don't have to be reminded. And, you know, I can just go like that or something, you know, just kind of click my head. Because it's not
head,
on.
Little halted, yeah.
Yeah, just a head. Okay, they said, okay, fine. So they were happy with that. Then I started seeing the shows come out that we were doing that in. They went back and they pulled out old close-ups. If you watch that series, you'll start noticing that through a lot of the shows, there's the same exact close-up because they pulled it from that show over there, but it was tight enough to where you couldn't
quite see,
you know, what I was wearing or where we were, and so it's the same freaking ear.
One of the things I loved about the show was Jamie's and, by extension, your sense of humor. Like, I really felt like she had... I felt like she sort of got that at times there was this absurdity to what was happening. And like, for her even, it was like, really? Like, I'm the person you're going to send in to do this? Like, I realize I've got bionics, but I'm not really a spy. Would you say that is a reflection, an extension of you? How much of Jamie Summers is Lindsay Wagner?
A lot, actually.
Yeah.
I worked very closely with the producer, writer, Kenny Johnson, and a couple of the other writers who became very substantial in creating several of the shows. Because we had an agreement, part of my agreement if I was going to do the show was that I didn't want to be a guy in a skirt doing a typical, action, I'm stronger, therefore I win show. And so we need to write things in such a way that is kind of more honest to the circumstance, to the character, and how she got there, as well as because it was the time in history when it was, putting a woman in a man's position, we have to keep her still as a woman. It doesn't mean she can't do it, doesn't mean she can't grow to understand, but we need to think about, and this is the challenge for you guys, and I'm talking to all man's staff, to bring the feminine aspects of problem solving and compassion and things like that, even to the bad guy. You know, women are kind of wired that way. And, I mean, we may have our bitchy sides, but, you know, it's part of that thinking, which can be very helpful at times. And even way better than just kind of more of a linear right and wrong, left and right kind of thing. And so I was constantly badgering them to do that. Well, the other thing was that I wanted her to be able to use her head, to use her heart, and so if we have to have espionage and we have to have all the things in the formula of that show that we're obliged to fulfill, then how are we going to take up the time? We literally had a mandate that we had to have three bionic moves between each commercial.
Oh, wow.
So the show is broken up, I think, into four parts, and that's a lot. What are we going to do if I'm not going around bashing people, which I refuse to do?
Right.
You know, therefore, we did a lot of things, like push down a tree so that when the bad guys are chasing me with their aggression, if they're chasing me so fast they can't stop, they run into the tree. I didn't go...
Kind of turn them against,
it's
turn what they're
like
doing against
the
themselves.
Difference between Aikido and karate, right? Mm-hmm. You know, let them push themselves over with their own aggression. And so that then morphed into how are we going to fill these obligations? And that's where a lot of the humor came from. So it was like, well, why can't she have, I mean, you have a good sense of humor, Lindsay, and Kenny had a great sense of humor, and it happened to really be very simpatico, our humors. And so we started having fun. Why not? You know, so that's where a lot of the humor started coming from. I would ad lib stuff, and the more I ad lib, the more the writers learned kind of my thing. So they would then start writing it in, and then it just evolved, and that's how it came about.
One of my favorite episodes, there's a lot of them, but one of them was she has to become a female wrestler. And I can't remember the name under which it was like...
Savage Summers.
Yes, Savage Summers, thank you.
In this corner.
Because she's dressed in a basically a Native American type outfit. But I love that she really talked about how she didn't want to use the bionics for violence. Like that was... It offered her some extra protection that maybe another spy might be in danger from something, a way to get out of problems, but... The root of it was, I'm not going there just to punch things. And I love that about her. Let me see if do we have any questions here from folks for Lindsay Wagner? Yes, sir.
Since you've had extensive movie experience and things like that, I was just curious as to which actor or actresses, you had several that stood out that you worked really well with, had great chemistry, or you learned something from that surprised you or something that you're really glad you got to work with them.
Mm-hmm. Doing Shattered Dreams, which was a movie about domestic violence. I just forgot my husband's name. What was his name? What?
Michael Nouri.
Michael Nouri, sorry. Yeah, Michael Nouri and I, that was a very tough movie to make, very uncomfortable. And he was a wonderful person to work with in that kind of a difficult setup where we both had to be very raw and real, or it wouldn't sell. And you know, and then you cut, and then you're like people again, and it's like, I mean, just us people. I mean, that was a tough one. That was really, I was really, really happy it was Michael that was playing that part. Gosh. There's lots of things to say, and I can't believe it's not just rushing to the fore. I guess maybe because there's several things. It was wonderful working with Jane Wyman, actually, in The Incredible Journey of Dr. Meg Laurel. I don't know if you saw that movie. It was actually the first television movie I made. It was a 3-hour film. And it was great just being with her. She just, you know, do you remember who I'm talking about?
She
was an old, she was the generation before me. She was...
The name sounds
familiar. Jane, yeah, look her up. But she was the granny doctor in Meg Laurel. Academy Award winner, just old school from stage and movies and all that before television even, you know, was a thing. And she just so grounded in the art that it was very cool working with her. it was funny working with, well, I'm just having blank names who played geez, she's a big film actress right now. She was on The Bionic.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, I was going to mention her.
Sandra was...
I think that was the second movie of the three that you guys made later on, I think.
Yeah, they were trying to make her into a bionic woman to have a new generation of shows. And she was so green, and it was so funny, but it was fun to watch someone so new and so green that it was like a lot of times she wasn't even hitting her mark, so I kind of try to adjust and the camera's adjusting and we're trying to do this, but she had such a natural thing about her, you know, and so it was nice. I worked with her a little bit in various times to kind of help us get the scene and that kind of thing, but I thought this young girl really has some good juice, and I really think she's going to go somewhere. So I kind of really expected this series just to go. And we got back from filming it, and they did it, and then the studios said they weren't going to pick it up. And Kenny and all of us said, why? You know, they said, well, we don't think she can carry a series. And I said, are you kidding? I said, no, she's just green. I'm telling you, one or two more shows, and she's just going to be flying. And they're going, no. So they just didn't. And then, of course, she became Sandra Bullock, And it was like, those guys, every time they go to one of her movies, I'm sure they're sitting there kicking themselves,
Well, and Miss Congeniality is so funny because it's very much like the plot of the Miss United States episode that they did. So if you haven't watched it, there's an episode and she goes undercover in the Miss United States pageant. And she has to go all the way because she's got to be involved in the whole thing. And then... They even mentioned Miss Congeniality as a thing in the show. And it's so funny because Miss Congeniality was like, that's the same plot as that
when
episode of Bionic Woman.
When I saw that movie, I said, okay, I know that producer-writer grew up on my show.
That's right.
There's no question.
Well, it's interesting. Some of the other people, Helen Hunt, a young Helen Hunt, was on a Bionic Woman. I think Andy Griffith actually appeared.
Andy Griffith was on our second show, I think.
Evel Knievel. Yeah. That was a doozy. That was a doozy of an episode right there.
That was a doozy of a shoot.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, how much time you got?
Yeah. How many times? I bet it's like 15 times that you had to say Evel Knievel in that episode. Either he did, or you did, or somebody did. Like, they had to keep reminding us, just in case you came in at commercial, this is Evel Knievel. Like, I mean, they said it so many times.
That's funny. I'd have to watch it to remember that. I don't remember that.
I just remember it seemed to me like I got it. I know who he is. And I don't think, it was funny, Jamie Summers didn't know Evel Knievel. Like, she meets him, she's like, yeah, I'm Evel Knievel. She's like, oh, who? And I think he's.
That's
I think
why he was so nasty.
He was a
to
little
me.
Hurt. Yeah, I think he seemed a little bit hurt.
I never knew. That's funny.
Well, he's probably like, she's had one parachute accident. Look at all the stuff I've had. Right. I don't have my own show.
Right. Yeah, he was quite something. We had, for example, just one little thing. We had a scene where we're zipping around this mountain. Curves and whatnot on the bike. I don't know what we were doing, chasing something. I don't know. And all we were supposed to do was, we were at the bottom of this canyon, and all we were supposed to do with me on the bike was get on, and I put on the helmet or whatever, and get on, throw my leg over, and he says, let's go, and we just roll out of frame. Then they put the double on, and they take off, and they do the camera work, up in the hill, this whole thing. I got on the bike, and he freaking took off. And he went up that mountain as fast as that thing could go. And I was literally, I left my body. I'm telling you, because I was watching myself, pounding him on the back, swearing like a sailor. Stop this fucking... And then he stopped at the top, and I went, oh, my God. And he looked at me and goes... You okay? You're okay. And he took off back down the hill. And when we got to the bottom, he did this, like at 180, kind of, and got back in the camera where the car was to be, okay, now here I've got my crew and all these people are watching and I'm kind of white and frozen, you know, that feeling where your emotions haven't gotten all the way to the surface yet, but you know you're going to break down any minute. And so I kind of got off and summoned a joke, God knows how. And I just looked around and I went, wardrobe. And my assistant was there and she actually snapped a picture of me. I do have a picture of me getting off that bike, making a face. But I got in my room and then I just broke down and I started crying. It was like, all that emotion had to come back out. That was just one day.
Out
of many.
I can only imagine what the producers, they're thinking,
sweating.
Had to be freaking
yeah, they
out
were. Well,
watching that happen.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
They have a museum for him up the street.
Really?
Do they have Evel Knievel?
Pardon?
You can leave a comment about him up there.
Oh.
It's just a few blocks away.
Oh.
All right. Well, I've got a motorcycle. I got a motorcycle.
We
should go up there and take a picture and post on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in the Harley Davidson place.
Oh, it's in the Harley place.
Oh, I gotcha.
I mean, it's like at the corner.
Yeah.
Very close.
Yeah, there you go. What other questions do we have? Yes, right back here.
You mentioned about heroes in the relationship of television. Your character was obviously a hero to an entire generation. I'm very much interested in what your insight into today's heroes are. The heroes that we see today, as opposed to what we thought.
It's not an easy subject, and it's kind of a long discussion, which we don't have to go into, but I will kind of try to summarize some of that, my thoughts about it. Things are so violent and dark today, and in order for a show to survive, I think they feel they have to go there. So there's a lot more of that than problem solving, than you know, thinking through a story or that kind of thing, and so women, it's not a big deal for a woman to be a star of a show like that anymore, to be in those positions. And so for men and women both, we tried so hard to put some thoughts and concepts about adversity in the show. And still write it for the youth, you know. Whereas, in some ways, I feel we've gone backwards in a lot of the stuff, because a lot of what I see has gone back to good and bad. You know, if you're the villain in the show, you're just bad. And if you're, you know, they don't show perspective. They don't show that. Even in one of our shows, and I don't remember which one it was, to be honest with you, there was an episode where we kind of even looking at the Russians were our bad guy then. You know, that's who the bad guy was. And I think it's called Full Circle, don't they? But we tried to even write something in there where we were looking at the fact that he was doing his job and what he felt was right for his country, you know? If we looked deeper into these issues, I really believe that we could find ways through it that didn't involve just being the strongest force. To me, that's not power. There's a big difference between power and force. And so there are shows that actually start showing, you know, some that show power, internal power. Power of a whole person, a person that thinks, a person that feels, and a person that is physically capable. And then there are others that are just dependent on their strength and the power behind them, the force behind them, the forces behind them. So that's kind of what upsets me about it, but it's not uncommon. You know, I'm not sure because I haven't seen all the stuff that's out there. So I do know that they're writing more. It's funny, it seems like what they're writing today, they're writing the human stuff as the ancillary. They have a lot of teams today where there was sole stars before. So today there's the ensemble cast. And the human stories are in, say, the team, you know, on NCIS. You've got all the human stories of the what are they called? The team. and that's like that in a lot of the shows, but they still aren't, for the most part, showing the deeper dynamics of the so-called bad guy and good guy and how we might be. Because to me, to have a show be able to share something, teach something, help us see something a different way, explore something as a teacher, I'm sure that, you know, that's important to you. It's such a possibility for learning the television as opposed to just zone out, you know, and have fun and go on being the same. That's what I'm still missing in a lot of the shows.
Yeah, totally. No, and I wonder if it's sometimes, you know, in as a kid with Westerns, you know, you got the guy with the white hat and the guy with the black
hat.
And it's easy to know who's the good guy and the bad guy. And then for a time, it's like, you know, the guy with the black hat's just a guy with a different story. And if you can get through to that story and try to understand it, I think that's what Jamie Summers did a lot of times, was try to understand and put herself in the shoes of that other person, that they're just a person who's come through a different set of circumstances than I have. And if I can get through to them, then maybe we can kind of move forward together a little bit, as opposed to just, oh, now we're back to white hats and black hats, and you shoot the guy with the black hat, and the movie's done. Like, that's how it ends. I don't know if that
if I'm crazy there, but yeah. Because that all is being ingrained in us every time we watch it, and certainly for children, they're just being programmed like that. So if that teaches us, you know, how we're going to even relate with in relationships. If you don't have that spectrum of thinking about everyone, then it's going to be pockets, and if our morals or our sensitivities are only in pockets, then it's not going to be expressed here. And especially in, well, like I said, it's a big subject.
and you talk about relationships, about thinking, you know, it's not about winning and losing. It's about how do we solve a problem and move forward together. It's not everything is a battle to be won and lost. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. Yeah.
But I think by and large, the programming of television today is teaching that kind of thinking. Everything has to be in an election year,
we're reminded of that again.
Oh, please.
Yes. Of course, yes.
First of all, I love your work. You're amazing. And one of the movies I just recently rewatched was The Two Worlds of Jenny Logan. And I like the fact that you kind of attack the mental health issue in there. And, you know, one of the lines that I loved was in the office, she said, "We've just now discovered that there's rings on Saturn. We don't know everything about the human mind," you know, basically saying, don't think you just know everything and assume it's some recent trauma that I'm experiencing. While the character's experience was real, have you seen in your work the field advancing in mental health to wider avenues as opposed to just, well, it must just be something, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know.
Is that an encouraging kind of advancement, or you think maybe we're missing it still?
You're talking about mental health?
Like mental health?
Well, it depends on the source of mental health help you're talking about. It's certainly not helping. Well, I'm sorry to say, that's the wrong way to phrase it. If you're just using drugs to try and fix that, no, I don't think that's the right way at all. Because it's not addressing it, it's just kind of putting Band-Aids on things that are never going to heal. So, but I think there's a lot out there for that kind of thing, including looking at, which is something I guess I've been preaching forever, which is the body-mind-spirit connection. You have to address all those things. You can do a whole lot of work on yourself, and then if you're constantly eating sugar or you're constantly drinking, even if you're not drunk every day, but you have to have your drink or so every day, what are you doing? You're numbing yourself out to your feelings. You're not addressing the problem that you're having. And, you know, sugar and all the other stuff jack up our bodies with it. Oh, I feel fine. You know, that kind of stuff. A lot of the work that we do is being sabotaged by that, so we don't get anywhere. So we have to look at the body. We have to look at the mind. And then certainly there's that spiritual aspect. Whether you are religious or not, we are an energetic field. We have this, you know, I believe that a lot of the energy stuff that people talk about and call energy is the same thing we're talking about if we're a religious or spiritual person. It's that untangible part of ourself that we can't fathom. If you call it universal intelligence, you call it God, you call it, you know, that's, there's a lot to be said for it. But there's, I mean, it's on Time Magazine. Even quantum physics, all that kind of stuff is helping us. Affirmations, learning to change our perspectives, using acupuncture. Acupuncture addresses more than just the physical body. It's a very powerful treatment that realigns the nervous system, and which helps the mind, which helps then the body, because we're not so stressed out. And we're using the body to get there. So meditation. I mean, it's everywhere today.
What treatment would you have recommended for Jenny then, if you were her therapist in the movie?
For who?
For Jenny Logan. What treatment would you have recommended for her problem of traveling between worlds?
Pick one. I would have told her pick one. But she
gotta
ultimately
start
did.
Somewhere. I mean,
she
just start somewhere.
Did. Yeah. Well, it was an evolution, wasn't it, for her? She had to learn to trust herself, to depend on herself. For when something is, I'm a big believer in listening to your gut and believing your gut. Because a lot of times we experience things that are not in the paradigm of our immediate culture. And when those types of things happen, it's very challenging. But it's also an opportunity for us to grow big time. Because what it means is we have to come back in here and start listening and expanding our faith that we are experiencing or being shown something that is real on some level, or it's meaningful to us on some level. And I don't know where your questioning is coming from, but I guess it's coming from someplace or some challenge that you're experiencing. But learning to trust your gut and having the courage to let other people not get it. Don't try to make them get it. But to open up and be grateful for if you're being given a gift. I mean, there's been a lot of healing stuff come through me over the years, and it was like, I don't know why, I don't know where it's coming from, freak me out. And I didn't, for a long time, have anybody to talk to about it. And so to learn to trust that was something that was a gift, being brought into this dimension, if you will, from God or from whatever somebody else might call it. It just it was something to have to relax into. Some people actually can see spirits. There's a lot of different things that people, and it's like way weird for certain subcultures. And if you're in the middle of that culture, you've got to search your soul and see whether that's a real thing for you. And don't let people think you're crazy if your gut tells you no, because I really feel we can tell. But you have to give yourself permission to feel it, the yes or the no. And you also have to kind of ask from a higher power. If you're not religious, then you know, call it whatever you want, the divine intelligence, the intelligence of the universe, whatever your culture will allow. Ask for that higher awareness to become clear to you. Let it guide you from your heart, you know. But just don't get in a dialectic with others about it.
We need to go ahead and close up here. Sorry, we've got another panel coming in here in just a few minutes, so I do need to go and wrap up. Let's please give a very warm round of applause for Lindsay Wagner. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
All right.
Thank you guys very
Thank
much.
Thank you, everybody.